and often unsung heroes of each computing revolution. They are at the literal core of our desktops, laptops, smartphones, and tablets. But for that reason, they remain largely hidden to the end user. But from an economic and security perspective, building those chips is a very big deal. The markets tend toward lucrative monopolies, and security vulnerabilities are best spotted by those who work directly with the hardware. Each era of computing requires different kinds of chips. When desktops reigned supreme, chipmakers sought to maximize processing speed and graphics on a high-resolution screen with far less concern about power consumption. Desktops were, after all, always plugged in. Intel mastered the design of these chips and made billions in the process. But with the advent of smartphones, demand shifted toward more efficient uses of power, and Qualcomm, whose chips were based on designs by the British firm Arm, took the throne as the undisputed chip king. Now, as traditional computing programs are displaced by the operation of AI algorithms, requirements are once again shifting. Machine learning demands the rapid-fire execution of complex mathematical formulas, something for which neither Intel's nor Qualcomm's chips are built. Into the void stepped NVIDIA, a chipmaker that had previously excelled at graphics processing for video games. The math behind graphics processing aligned well with the requirements for AI, and NVIDIA became the go-to player in the chip market. Between 2016 and early 2018, the company's stock price multiplied by a factor of 10. These chips are central to everything from facial recognition to self-driving cars, and that has set off a race to build the next generation AI chip. Google and Microsoft, companies that had long avoided building their own chips, have jumped into the fray, alongside Intel, Qualcomm, and a batch of well-funded Silicon Valley chip startups. Facebook has partnered with Intel to test drive its first foray into AI-specific chips. But for the first time, much of the action in this space is taking place in China. The Chinese government has for many years, decades even, tried to build up indigenous chip capabilities. But constructing a high-performance chip is an extremely complex and expertise-intensive process, one that has so far remained impervious to several government-sponsored projects. For the last three decades, it's been private Silicon Valley firms that have cashed in on chip development. Chinese leaders and a raft of chip startups are hoping that this time is different. The Chinese Ministry of Science and Technology is doling out large sums of money, naming as a specific goal the construction of a chip with performance and energy efficiency 20 times better than one of NVIDIA's current offerings. Chinese chip startups like Horizon Robotics, Bitmain, and Cambricon Technologies are flush with investment capital and working on products tailor-made for self-driving cars or other AI use cases. The country's edge in data will also feed into chip development, offering hardware makers a feast of examples on which to test their products. On balance, Silicon Valley remains the clear leader in AI chip development. But it's a lead that the Chinese government and the country's venture capital community are trying their best to erase. That's because, when economic disruption occurs on the scale promised by artificial intelligence, it isn't just a business question. It's also a major political question. A Tale of Two AI Plans. On October 12, 2016, President Barack Obama's White House released a long-brewing plan for how the United States can harness the power of artificial intelligence. The document detailed the transformation AI is set to bring to the economy and laid out steps to seize that opportunity, increasing funding for research, stepping up civilian-military cooperation, and making investments to mitigate social disruptions. It offered a decent summary of changes on the horizon and some common-sense prescriptions for adaptation. But the report, issued by the most powerful political office in the United States, had about the same impact as a wonkish policy paper from an academic think tank. Released the same week as Donald Trump's infamous Access Hollywood videotape, the White House report barely registered in the American news cycle, It did not spark a national surge in interest about AI. It did not lead to a flood of new VC investments and government funding for AI startups. And it didn't galvanize mayors or governors to adopt AI-friendly policies. In fact, when President Trump took office just 3 months after the report's debut, he proposed cutting funding for AI research at the National Science Foundation. The limp response to the Obama report made for a stark contrast to the shockwaves generated by the Chinese government's own AI plan. Like past Chinese government documents on technology, it was plain in its language but momentous in its impact. Published in July 2017, the Chinese State Council's Development Plan for a New Generation of Artificial Intelligence shared many of the same predictions and recommendations as the White House plan. It also spelled out hundreds of industry-specific applications of AI and laid down signposts for China's progress toward becoming an AI superpower. It called for China to reach the top tier of AI economies by 2020, achieve major new breakthroughs by 2025, and become the global leader in AI by 2030. If AlphaGo was China's Sputnik moment, the government's AI plan was like President John F. Kennedy's landmark speech calling for America to land a man on the moon. The report lacked Kennedy's soaring rhetoric, but it set off a similar national mobilization, an all-hands-on-deck approach to national innovation. Betting on AI. China's AI plan originated at the highest levels of the central government, but China's ambitious mayors are where the real action takes place. Following the release of the State Council's plan, local officials angling for promotion threw themselves into the goal of turning their cities into hubs for AI development. They offered subsidies for research, directed venture capital guiding funds toward AI, purchased the products and services of local AI startups, and set up dozens of special development zones and incubators. We can see the intricacy of these support policies by zooming in on one city, Nanjing. The capital of Jiangsu province on China's eastern seaboard, Nanjing is not among the top tier of Chinese cities for startups. Those honors go to Beijing, Shenzhen, and Hangzhou. But in a bid to transform Nanjing into an AI hotspot, the city government is pouring vast sums of money and policy resources into attracting AI companies and top talent. Between 2017 and 2020, the Nanjing Economic and Technological Development Zone plans to put at least 3 billion RMB, around $450 million, into AI development. That money will go toward a dizzying array of AI subsidies and perks, including investments of up to 15 million RMB in local companies, grants of 1 million RMB per company to attract talent, rebates on research expenses of up to 5 million RMB, creation of an AI training institute, government contracts for facial recognition and autonomous robot technology, simplified procedures for registering a company, seed funding and office space for military veterans, free company shuttles, coveted spots at local schools for the children of company executives, and special apartments for employees of AI startups. And that is all in just one city. Nanjing's population of 7 million ranks just 10th in China, a country with 100 cities of more than a million people. This blizzard of government incentives is going on across many of those cities right now, all competing to attract, fund, and empower AI companies. It's a process of government-accelerated technological development that I've witnessed twice in the past decade. Between 2007 and 2017, China went from having zero high-speed rail lines to having more miles of high-speed rail operational than the rest of the world combined. During the mass innovation and mass entrepreneurship campaign that began in 2015, a similar flurry of incentives created 6,600 new startup incubators and shifted the national culture around technology startups. Of course, it's too early to know the exact results of China's AI campaign, but if Chinese history is any guide, it is likely to be somewhat inefficient but extremely effective. The sheer scope of financing and speed of deployment almost guarantees that there will be inefficiencies. Government bureaucracies cannot rapidly deploy billions of dollars in investments and subsidies without some amount of waste. There will be dorms for AI employees that will never be inhabited, and investments in startups that will never get off the ground. There will be traditional technology companies that merely rebrand themselves as AI companies to rake in subsidies, and AI equipment purchases that simply gather dust in government offices. But that's a risk these Chinese government officials are willing to take, a loss they're willing to absorb in pursuit of a larger goal: brute forcing the economic and technological upgrading of their cities. The potential upside of that transformation is large enough to warrant making expensive bets on the next big thing. And if the bet doesn't pan out, the mayors won't be endlessly pilloried by their opponents for attempting to act on the central government's wishes. Contrast that with the political firestorm following big bets gone bad in the United States. After the 2008 financial crisis, President Obama's stimulus program included plans for government loan guarantees on promising renewable energy projects. It was a program designed to stimulate a stagnant economy, but also to facilitate a broader economic and environmental shift toward green energy. One of the recipients of those loan guarantees was Solyndra, a California solar panel company that initially looked promising, but then went bankrupt in 2011. President Obama's critics quickly turned that failure into one of the most potent political bludgeons of the 2012 presidential election. They hammered the president with millions of dollars in attack ads, criticizing the wasteful spending as a symptom of crony capitalism and venture socialism. Never mind that on the whole, the loan guarantee program is projected to earn money for the federal government. One high-profile failure was enough to tar the entire enterprise of technological upgrading. Obama survived the negative onslaught to win another term, but the lessons for American politicians were clear. Using government funding to invest in economic and technological upgrades is a risky business. Successes are often ignored, and every misfire becomes fodder for attack ads. It's far safer to stay out of the messy business of upgrading an economy. Self-driving dilemmas. That same divide in political cultures applies to creating a supportive policy environment for AI development. For the past 30 years, Chinese leaders have practiced a kind of techno-utilitarianism, leveraging technological upgrades to maximize broader social good while accepting that there will be downsides for certain individuals or industries. It, like all political structures, is a highly imperfect system. Top-down government mandates to expand investment and production can also send the pendulum of public investment swinging too far in a given direction. In recent years, this has led to massive gluts of supply and unsustainable debt loads in Chinese industries, ranging from solar panels to steel. But when national leaders correctly channel those mandates toward new technologies that can lead to seismic economic shifts, the techno-utilitarian approach can have huge upsides. Self-driving cars can make for a good example of this balancing act. In 2016, the United States lost 40,000 people to traffic accidents. That annual death toll is equivalent to the 9/11 terrorist attacks occurring once every month from January through November, and twice in December. The World Health Organization estimates that there are around 260,000 annual road fatalities in China and 1.25 million around the globe. Autonomous vehicles are on path to eventually being far safer than human-driven vehicles, and widespread deployment of the technology will dramatically decrease these fatalities. It will also lead to huge increases in efficiency of transportation and logistics networks, gains that will echo throughout the entire economy. But alongside the lives saved and productivity gained, there will be other instances in which jobs or even lives are lost due to the very same technology. For starters, taxi, truck, bus, and delivery drivers will be largely out of luck in a self-driving world. There will also inevitably be malfunctions in autonomous vehicles that cause crashes. There will be circumstances that force an autonomous vehicle to make agonizing ethical decisions, like whether to veer right and have a 55% chance of killing two people, or veer left and have a 100% chance of killing one person. Every one of these downside risks presents thorny ethical questions. How should we balance the livelihoods of millions of truck drivers against the billions of dollars and millions of hours saved by autonomous vehicles? What should a self-driving car optimize for in situations where it is forced to choose which car to crash into? How should an autonomous vehicle's algorithm weigh the life of its owner? Should your self-driving car sacrifice your own life to save the lives of three other people? These are the questions that keep ethicists up at night. They're also questions that could hold up the legislation needed for autonomous vehicle deployment and tie up AI companies in years of lawsuits. They may well lead American politicians, ever fearful of interest groups and attack ads, to pump the brakes on widespread self-driving vehicle deployment. We've already seen early signs of this happening, with unions representing truck drivers successfully lobbying Congress in 2017 to exclude trucks from legislation aimed at speeding up autonomous vehicle deployment. I believe the Chinese government will see these difficult concerns as important topics to explore, but not as a reason to delay the implementation of technology that will save tens, if not hundreds of thousands of lives in the not-too-distant future. For better or worse, and I recognize that most Americans may not embrace this view, Chinese political culture doesn't carry the American expectation of reaching a moral consensus on each of the above questions. Promotion of a broader social good, the long-term payoff and lives saved, is a good enough reason to begin implementation, with outlier cases and legal intricacies to be dealt with in due time. Again, this is not a call for the United States and Europe to mimic the techno-utilitarian approach utilized in China. Every country should decide on its own approach based on its own cultural values. But it's important to understand the Chinese approach and the implications it holds for the pace and path of AI development. Accelerating that deployment will feature the same scramble by local government officials to stand out on AI. Along with competing to attract AI companies through subsidies, these mayors and provincial governors will compete to be the first to implement high-profile AI projects, such as AI-assisted doctors at public hospitals, or autonomous trucking routes and city brains that optimize urban traffic grids. They can pursue these projects for both the political points scored and the broad social upside, spending less time obsessing over the downside risks that would scare away risk-sensitive American politicians. This is not an ethical judgment on either of these two systems. Utilitarian government systems and rights-based approaches both have their blind spots and downsides. America's openness to immigration and emphasis on individual rights has long helped it attract some of the brightest minds from around the world, people like Enrico Fermi, Albert Einstein, and many leading AI scientists today. China's top-down approach to economic upgrades and the eagerness of low-level officials to embrace each new central government mandate can also lead to waste and debt if the target industries are not chosen well. But in this particular instance, building a society and economy prepared to harness the potential of AI, China's techno-utilitarian approach gives it a certain advantage. Its acceptance of risk allows the government to make big bets on game-changing technologies, and its approach to policy will encourage faster adoption of those technologies. With these national strengths and weaknesses in mind, we can construct a timeline for AI deployment and look at how specific AI products and systems are set to change the world around us. 5. The Four Waves of AI. The year 2017 marked the first time I heard Donald Trump speak fluent Chinese. During the U.S. president's first trip to China, he showed up on a big screen to welcome attendees at a major tech conference. He began his speech in English and then abruptly switched languages. AI is changing the world, he said, speaking in flawless Chinese but with typical Trump bluster. And iFly tech is really fantastic. President Trump cannot, of course, speak Chinese. But AI is indeed changing the world, and Chinese companies like iFly Tech are leading the way. By training its algorithms on large data samples of President Trump's speeches, iFly Tech created a near-perfect digital model of his voice, intonation, pitch, and pattern of speech. It then recalibrated that vocal model for Mandarin Chinese, showing the world what Donald Trump might sound like if he grew up in a village outside Beijing. The movement of lips wasn't precisely synced to the Chinese words, but it was close enough to fool a casual viewer at first glance. President Obama got the same treatment from iFly Tech, a video of a real press conference but with his professional style converted to perfect Mandarin. With the help of iFly Tech, I've learned Chinese, Obama intoned to the White House press corps. I think my Chinese is better than Trump's. What do all of you think? iFly Tech might say the same to its own competitors. The Chinese company has racked up victories at a series of prestigious international AI competitions for speech recognition, speech synthesis, image recognition, and machine translation. Even in the company's second language of English, iFly Tech often beats teams from Google, DeepMind, Facebook, and IBM Watson in natural language processing. That is, the ability of AI to decipher overall meaning rather than just words. This success didn't come overnight. Back in 1999, when I started Microsoft Research Asia, my top choice recruit was a brilliant young PhD named Liu Qingfeng. He had been one of the students I saw filing out of the dorms to study under streetlights after my lecture in Hefei. Liu was both hardworking and creative in tackling research questions. He was one of China's most promising young researchers. But when we asked him to accept our scholarship offer and become a Microsoft intern and then an employee, he declined. He wanted to start his own AI speech company. I told him that he was a great young researcher, but that China lagged too far behind American speech recognition giants like Nuance, and there were fewer customers in China for his technology. To his credit, Liu ignored that advice and poured himself into building iFly Tech. Nearly 20 years and dozens of AI competition awards later, iFly Tech has surpassed Nuance in capabilities and market cap, becoming the most valuable AI speech company in the world. Combining iFly Tech's cutting-edge capabilities in speech recognition, translation, and synthesis will yield transformative AI products, including simultaneous translation earpieces that instantly convert your words and voice into any language. It's the kind of product that will soon revolutionize international travel, business, and culture, and unlock vast new stores of time, productivity, and creativity in the process. The waves. But it won't happen all at once. The complete AI revolution will take a little time and will ultimately wash over us in a series of four waves: Internet AI, Business AI, Perception AI, and Autonomous AI. Each of these waves harnesses AI's power in a different way, disrupting different sectors and weaving artificial intelligence deeper into the fabric of our daily lives. The first two waves, Internet AI and Business AI, are already all around us, reshaping our digital and financial worlds in ways we can barely register. They are tightening internet companies' grip on our attention, replacing paralegals with algorithms, trading stocks, and diagnosing illnesses. Perception AI is now digitizing our physical world, learning to recognize our faces, understand our requests, and see the world around us. This wave promises to revolutionize how we experience and interact with our world, blurring the lines between the digital and physical worlds. Autonomous AI will come last, but will have the deepest impact on our lives. As self-driving cars take to the streets, autonomous drones take to the skies, and intelligent robots take over factories, they will transform everything from organic farming to highway driving and fast food. These four waves all feed off of different kinds of data, and each one presents a unique opportunity for the United States or China to seize the lead. We'll see that China is in a strong position to lead or co-lead in Internet AI and perception AI, and will likely soon catch up with the United States in autonomous AI. Currently, business AI remains the only arena in which the United States maintains clear leadership. Competition, however, won't play out in just these two countries. AI-driven services that are pioneered in the United States and China will then proliferate across billions of users around the globe, many of them in developing countries. Companies like Uber, Didi, Alibaba, and Amazon are already fiercely competing for these developing markets, but adopting very different strategies. While Silicon Valley juggernauts are trying to conquer each new market with their own products, China's internet companies are instead investing in these countries' scrappy local startups as they try to fight off U.S. domination. It's a competition that's just getting started, and one that will have profound implications for the global economic landscape of the 21st century. To understand how this coming competition will play out at home and abroad, we must first take a dive into each of the four waves of AI washing over our economies. First wave, Internet AI. Internet AI already likely has a strong grip on your eyeballs, if not your wallet. Ever find yourself going down an endless rabbit hole of YouTube videos? Do video streaming sites have an uncanny knack for recommending that next video that you've just got to check out before you get back to work? Does Amazon seem to know what you'll want to buy before you do? If so, then you have been the beneficiary, or victim, depending on how you value your time, privacy, and money, of Internet AI. This first wave began almost 15 years ago, but finally went mainstream around 2012. Internet AI is largely about using AI algorithms as recommendation engines, systems that learn our personal preferences and then serve up content hand-picked for us. The horsepower of these AI engines depends on the digital data they have access to, and there's currently no greater storehouse of this data than the major internet companies. But that data only becomes truly useful to algorithms once it has been labeled. In this case, labeled doesn't mean you have to actively rate the content or tag it with a keyword. Labels simply come from linking a piece of data with a specific outcome. Bought versus didn't buy. Clicked versus didn't click. Watched until the end versus switched videos. Those labels, our purchases, likes, views, or lingering moments on a web page, are then used to train algorithms to recommend more content that we're likely to consume. Average people experience this as the internet getting better, that is, at giving us what we want, and becoming more addictive as it goes. But it's also proof of the power of AI to learn about us through data and then optimize for what we desire. That optimization has been translated into massive increases in profits for established internet companies that make money off our clicks, the Googles, Baidus, Alibabas, and YouTubes of the world. Using internet AI, Alibaba can recommend products you're more likely to buy, Google can target you with ads you're more likely to click on, and YouTube can suggest videos that you're more likely to watch. Adopting those same methods in a different context, a company like Cambridge Analytica used Facebook data to better understand and target American voters during the 2016 presidential campaign. Revealingly, it was Robert Mercer, founder of Cambridge Analytica, who reportedly coined the famous phrase, "There's no data like more data." Algorithms and editors. First wave AI has given birth to entirely new AI-driven internet companies. China's leader in this category is Jinri Toutiao, meaning today's headlines. English name ByteDance. Founded in 2012, Toutiao is sometimes called the BuzzFeed of China because both sites serve as hubs for timely viral stories. But virality is where similarities stop. BuzzFeed is built on a staff of young editors with a knack for cooking up original content. Toutiao's editors are algorithms. Toutiao's AI engines troll the internet for content, using natural language processing and computer vision to digest articles and videos from a vast network of partner sites and commissioned contributors. It then uses the past behavior of its users, their clicks, reads, views, comments, and so on, to curate a highly personalized newsfeed tailored to each person's interests. The app's algorithms even rewrite headlines to optimize for user clicks. And the more those users click, the better Toutiao becomes at recommending precisely the content they want to see. It's a positive feedback loop that has created one of the most addictive content platforms on the internet, with users spending an average of 74 minutes per day in the app. Robot reports and fake news. Reaching beyond simple curation, Toutiao also uses machine learning to create and police its content. During the 2016 Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Toutiao worked with Peking University to create an AI reporter that wrote short articles summing up sports events within minutes of the final whistle. The writing wasn't exactly poetry, but the speed was incredible. The reporter produced short summaries within 2 seconds of some events' finish, and it covered over 30 events per day. Algorithms are also being used to sniff out fake news on the platform, often in the form of bogus medical treatments. Originally, readers discovered and reported misleading stories, essentially free labeling of that data. Toutiao then used that labeled data to train an algorithm that could identify fake news in the wild. Toutiao even trained a separate algorithm to write fake news stories. It then pitted those two algorithms against each other, competing to fool one another and improving both in the process. This AI-driven approach to content is paying off. By late 2017, Toutiao was already valued at $20 billion and went on to raise a new round of funding that would value it at $30 billion, dwarfing the $1.7 billion valuation for BuzzFeed at that time. For 2018, Toutiao projected revenues between $4.5 and $7.6 billion, and the Chinese company is rapidly working to expand overseas. After trying and failing in 2016 to buy Reddit, the popular U.S. aggregation and discussion site, in 2017, Toutiao snapped up a France-based news aggregator and Musical.ly, a Chinese video lip-syncing app that's widely popular with American teens. Toutiao is just one company, but its success is indicative of China's strength in internet AI. With more than 700 million internet users all digesting content in the same language, China's internet juggernauts are reaping massive rewards from optimizing online services with AI. That has helped fuel the rapid rise of Tencent's market cap, surpassing Facebook in November 2017 and becoming the first Chinese company to top $500 billion, and has allowed Alibaba to hold its own with Amazon. Despite Baidu's strength in AI research, its mobile services lagged far behind Google. But that gap is more than made up for by upstarts like Toutiao. Chinese companies that are generating multi-billion dollar valuations by building their business foundation on internet AI. Massive profits will accrue to these internet companies as they become even better at holding our attention longer and harvesting our clicks. Overall, Chinese and American companies are on about equal footing in internet AI, with around 50-50 odds of leadership based on current technology. I predict that in 5 years' time, Chinese technology companies will have a slight advantage, 60-40, when it comes to leading the world in internet AI and reaping the richest rewards from its implementation. Remember, China alone has more internet users than the United States and all of Europe combined. And those users are empowered to make frictionless mobile payments to content creators, O2O platforms, and other users. That combination is generating creative internet AI applications and opportunities for monetization unmatched anywhere else in the world. Add China's tenacious and well-funded entrepreneurs into the mix, and China has a strong, but not yet decisive, edge over Silicon Valley. But for all the economic value that the first AI wave generates, It remains largely bottled up in the high-tech sector and digital world. Bringing the optimization power of AI to bear on more traditional companies in the wider economy comes during the second wave. Business AI. Second wave, business AI. First wave AI leverages the fact that internet users are automatically labeling data as they browse. Business AI takes advantage of the fact that traditional companies have also been automatically labeling huge quantities of data for decades. For instance, insurance companies have been covering accidents and catching fraud, banks have been issuing loans and documenting repayment rates, and hospitals have been keeping records of diagnoses and survival rates. All of these actions generate labeled data points, a set of characteristics and a meaningful outcome. But until recently, most traditional businesses had a hard time exploiting that data for better results. Business AI mines these databases for hidden correlations that often escape the naked eye and human brain. It draws on all the historic decisions and outcomes within an organization and uses labeled data to train an algorithm that can outperform even the most experienced human practitioners. That's because humans normally make predictions on the basis of strong features, a handful of data points that are highly correlated to a specific outcome, often in a clear cause and effect relationship. For example, in predicting the likelihood of someone contracting diabetes, a person's weight and body mass index are strong features. AI algorithms do indeed factor in these strong features, but they also look at thousands of other weak features, peripheral data points that might appear unrelated to the outcome, but contain some predictive power when combined across tens of millions of examples. These subtle correlations are often impossible for any human to explain in terms of cause and effect. Why do borrowers who take out loans on a Wednesday repay those loans faster? But algorithms that can combine thousands of those weak and strong features, often using complex mathematical relationships indecipherable to a human brain, will outperform even top-notch humans at many analytical business tasks. Optimizations like this work well in industries with large amounts of structured data on meaningful business outcomes. In this case, structured refers to data that has been categorized, labeled, and made searchable. Prime examples of well-structured corporate data sets include historic stock prices, credit card usage, and mortgage defaults. The business of business AI. As early as 2004, companies like Palantir and IBM Watson offered big data business consulting to companies and governments. But the widespread adoption of deep learning in 2013 turbocharged these capabilities and gave birth to new competitors, such as Element AI in Canada and Fourth Paradigm in China. These startups sell their services to traditional companies or organizations, offering to let their algorithms loose on existing databases in search of optimizations. They help these companies improve fraud detection, make smarter trades, and uncover inefficiencies in supply chains. Early instances of business AI have clustered heavily in the financial sector because it naturally lends itself to data analysis. The industry runs on well-structured information and has clear metrics that it seeks to optimize. This is also why the United States has built a strong lead in early applications of business AI. Major American corporations already collect large amounts of data and store it in well-structured formats. They often use enterprise software for accounting, inventory, and customer relationship management. Once the data is in these formats, it's easy for companies like Palantir to come in and generate meaningful results by applying business AI to seek out cost savings and profit maximization. This is not so in China. Chinese companies have never truly embraced enterprise software or standardized data storage, instead keeping their books according to their own idiosyncratic systems. Those systems are often not scalable and are difficult to integrate into existing software, making the cleaning and structuring of data a far more taxing process. Poor data also makes the results of AI optimizations less robust. As a matter of business culture, Chinese companies spend far less money on third-party consulting than their American counterparts. Many old-school Chinese businesses are still run more like personal fiefdoms than modern organizations, and outside expertise isn't considered something worth paying for. Fire your banker. Both China's corporate data and its corporate culture make applying second-wave AI to its traditional companies a challenge. But in industries where business AI can leapfrog legacy systems, China is making serious strides. In these instances, China's relative backwardness in areas like financial services turns into a springboard to cutting-edge AI applications. One of the most promising of these is AI-powered microfinance. For example, when China leapfrogged credit cards to move right into mobile payments, it forgot one key piece of the consumer puzzle: credit itself. WeChat and Alipay let you draw directly from your bank account, but their core services don't give you the ability to spend a little bit beyond your means while you're waiting for the next paycheck. Into this void stepped Smart Finance, an AI-powered app that relies exclusively on algorithms to make millions of small loans. Instead of asking borrowers to enter how much money they make, it simply requests access to some of the data on a potential borrower's phone. That data forms a kind of digital fingerprint, one with an astonishing ability to predict whether the borrower will pay back a loan of $300. Smart Finance's deep learning algorithms don't just look to the obvious metrics, like how much money is in your WeChat wallet. Instead, it derives predictive power from data points that would seem irrelevant to a human loan officer. For instance, it considers the speed at which you typed in your date of birth, how much battery power is left on your phone, and thousands of other parameters. What does an applicant's phone battery have to do with creditworthiness? This is the kind of question that can't be answered in terms of simple cause and effect. But that's not a sign of the limitations of AI. It's a sign of the limitations of our own minds at recognizing correlations hidden within massive streams of data. By training its algorithms on millions of loans, many that got paid back and some that didn't, Smart Finance has discovered thousands of weak features that are correlated to creditworthiness, even if those correlations can't be explained in a simple way humans can understand. Those offbeat metrics constitute what Smart Finance founder Ka Jiao calls a new standard of beauty for lending, one to replace the crude metrics of income, zip code, and even credit score. Growing mountains of data continue to refine these algorithms, allowing the company to scale up and extend credit to groups routinely ignored by China's traditional banking sector: young people and migrant workers. In late 2017, the company was making more than 2 million loans per month with default rates in the low single digits, a track record that makes traditional brick-and-mortar banks extremely jealous. The algorithm will see you now. But business AI can be about more than dollars and cents. When applied to other information-driven public goods, it can mean a massive democratization of high-quality services to those who previously couldn't afford them. One of the most promising of these is medical diagnosis. Top researchers in the United States, like Andrew Ng and Sebastian Thrun, have demonstrated excellent algorithms that are on par with doctors at diagnosing specific illnesses based on AI: pneumonia through chest x-rays and skin cancer through photos. But a broader business AI application for medicine will look to handle the entire diagnosis process for a wide variety of illnesses. Right now, medical knowledge, and thus the power to deliver accurate diagnoses, is pretty much kept bottled up within a small number of very talented humans, people with imperfect memories and limited time to keep up with new advances in the field. Sure, a vast wealth of medical information is scattered across the internet, but not in a way that is navigable by most people. First-rate medical diagnosis is still heavily rationed based on geography and, quite candidly, one's ability to pay. This is especially stark in China, where well-trained doctors all cluster in the wealthiest cities. Travel outside Beijing and Shanghai, and you're likely to see a dramatic drop in the medical knowledge of doctors treating your illness. The result? Patients from all around the country try to cram into the major hospitals, lining up for days and straining limited resources to the breaking point. Second wave AI promises to change all of this. Underneath the many social elements of visiting a doctor, the crux of diagnosis involves collecting data, symptoms, medical history, environmental factors, and predicting the phenomena correlated with them, an illness. This act of seeking out various correlations and making predictions is exactly what deep learning excels at. Given enough training data, in this case precise medical records, an AI-powered diagnostic tool could turn any medical professional into a super diagnostician. A doctor with experience in tens of millions of cases, an uncanny ability to spot hidden correlations, and a perfect memory to boot. This is what RX Thinking is attempting to build. Founded by a Chinese AI researcher with deep experience in Silicon Valley and at Baidu, the startup is training medical AI algorithms to become super diagnosticians that can be dispatched to all corners of China. Instead of replacing doctors with algorithms, RX Thinking's AI diagnosis app empowers them. It acts like a navigation app for the diagnosis process, drawing on all available knowledge to recommend the best route, but still letting the doctors steer the car. As the algorithm gains more information on each specific case, it progressively narrows the scope of possible illnesses and requests further clarifying information needed to complete the diagnosis. Once enough information has been entered to give the algorithm a high level of certainty, it makes a prediction for the cause of the symptoms, along with all other possible diagnoses, and the percentage chance that they are the real culprit. The app never overrides a doctor, who can always choose to deviate from the app's recommendations, but it draws on over 400 million existing medical records and continually scans the latest medical publications to make recommendations. It disseminates world-class medical knowledge equally throughout highly unequal societies and lets all doctors and nurses focus on the human tasks that no machine can do, making patients feel cared for and consoling them when the diagnosis isn't bright. Judging the judges. Similar principles are now being applied to China's legal system, another sprawling bureaucracy with highly uneven levels of expertise across regions. iFlyTech has taken the lead in applying AI to the courtroom, building tools and executing a Shanghai-based pilot program that uses data from past cases to advise judges on both evidence and sentencing. An evidence cross-reference system uses speech recognition and natural language processing to compare all evidence presented, testimony, documents, and background material, and seek out contradictory fact patterns. It then alerts the judge to these disputes, allowing for further investigation and clarification by court officers. Once a ruling is handed down, the judge can turn to yet another AI tool for advice on sentencing. The sentencing assistant starts with the fact pattern, defendant's criminal record, age, damages incurred, and so on. Then its algorithms scan millions of court records for similar cases. It uses that body of knowledge to make recommendations for jail time or fines to be paid. Judges can also view similar cases as data points scattered across an XY graph, clicking on each dot for details on the fact pattern that led to the sentence. It's a process that builds consistency in a system with over 100,000 judges, and it can also rein in outliers whose sentencing patterns put them far outside the mainstream. One Chinese province is even using AI to rate and rank all prosecutors on their performance. Some American courts have implemented similar algorithms to advise on the risk level of prisoners up for parole, though the role and lack of transparency of these AI tools have already been challenged in higher courts. As with RX Thinking's navigation system for doctors, all of iFlyTech's judicial tools are just that, tools that aid a real human in making informed decisions. By empowering judges with data-driven recommendations, they can help balance the scales of justice and correct for the biases present in even well-trained judges. American legal scholars have illustrated vast disparities in U.S. sentencing based on the race of the victim and the defendant. And judicial biases can be far less malicious than racism. A study of Israeli judges found them far more severe in their decisions before lunch and more lenient in granting parole after having a good meal. Who leads? So which country will lead in the broader category of business AI? Today, the United States enjoys a commanding lead, 90-10, in this wave. But I believe in 5 years, China will close that gap somewhat, 70-30. And the Chinese government has a better shot at putting the power of business AI to good use. The United States has a clear advantage in the most immediate and profitable implementations of the technology, optimizations within banking, insurance, or any industry with lots of structured data that can be mined for better decision-making. Its companies have the raw material and corporate willpower to apply business AI to the problem of maximizing their bottom line. There's no question that China will lag in the corporate world, but it may lead in public services and industries with the potential to leapfrog outdated systems. The country's immature financial system and imbalanced healthcare system give it strong incentives to rethink how services like consumer credit and medical care are distributed. Business AI will turn those weaknesses into strengths as it reimagines these industries from the ground up. These applications of second-wave AI have immediate real-world impacts, but the algorithms themselves are still trafficking purely in digital information mediated by humans. Third-wave AI changes all of this by giving AI two of humans' most valuable information-gathering tools, eyes and ears. Third wave, perception AI. Before AI, all machines were deaf and blind. Sure, you could take digital photos or make audio recordings, but these merely reproduced our audio and visual environments for humans to interpret. The machines themselves couldn't make sense of these reproductions. To a normal computer, a photograph is just a meaningless splattering of pixels it must store. To an iPhone, a song is just a series of zeros and ones that it must play for a human to enjoy. This all changed with the advent of perception AI. Algorithms can now group the pixels from a photo or video into meaningful clusters and recognize objects in much the same way our brain does. Golden retriever, traffic light, your brother Patrick, and so on. The same goes for audio data. Instead of merely storing audio files as collections of digital bits, algorithms can now both pick out words and often parse the meaning of full sentences. Third wave AI is all about extending and expanding this power throughout our lived environment, digitizing the world around us through the proliferation of sensors and smart devices. These devices are turning our physical world into digital data that can then be analyzed and optimized by deep learning algorithms. Amazon Echo is digitizing the audio environment of people's homes. Alibaba's City Brain is digitizing urban traffic flows through cameras and object recognition AI. Apple's iPhone X and Face++ cameras perform that same digitization for faces, using the perception data to safeguard your phone or digital wallet. Blurred lines and our OMO world. As a result, perception AI is beginning to blur the lines separating the online and offline worlds. It does that by dramatically expanding the nodes through which we interact with the internet. Before perception AI, our interactions with the online world had to squeeze through two very narrow choke points: the keyboards on our computers or the screen on our smartphones. Those devices act as portals to the vast knowledge stored on the World Wide Web. But they are a very clunky way to input or retrieve information, especially when you're out shopping or driving in the real world. As perception AI gets better at recognizing our faces, understanding our voices, and seeing the world around us, it will add millions of seamless points of contact between the online and offline worlds. Those nodes will be so pervasive that it no longer makes sense to think of oneself as going online. When you order a full meal just by speaking a sentence from your couch, are you online or offline? When your refrigerator at home tells your shopping cart at the store that you're out of milk, are you moving through a physical world or a digital one? I call these new blended environments OMO, Online Merge Offline. OMO is the next step in an evolution that already took us from pure e-commerce deliveries to O2O, online to offline services. Each of those steps has built new bridges between the online world and our physical one, but OMO constitutes the full integration of the two. It brings the convenience of the online world offline, and the rich sensory reality of the offline world online. Over the coming years, Perception AI will turn shopping malls, grocery stores, city streets, and our homes into OMO environments. In the process, it will produce some of the first applications of artificial intelligence that will feel truly futuristic to the average user. Some of these are already here. One KFC restaurant in China recently teamed up with Alipay to pioneer a pay-with-your-face option at some stores. Customers place their own order at a digital terminal, and a quick facial scan connects their order to their Alipay account. No cash, cards, or cell phones required. The AI powering the machines even runs a quick liveness algorithm to ensure no one can use a photograph of someone else's face to pay for a meal. Pay with your face applications are fun, but they are just the tip of the OMO iceberg. To get a sense of where things are headed, let's take a quick trip just a few years into the future to see what a supermarket fully outfitted with Perception AI devices might look like. Where every shopping cart knows your name. Ni hao, Kaifu. Welcome back to Yonghui Superstore. It's always a nice feeling when your shopping cart greets you like an old friend. As I pull the cart back from the rack, visual sensors embedded in the handlebar have already completed a scan of my face and matched it to a rich AI-driven profile of my habits as a foodie, a shopper, and a husband to a fantastic cook of Chinese food. While I'm racking my brain for what groceries we'll need this week, a screen on the handlebar lights up. On the screen is a list of your typical weekly grocery purchase, the cart announces. And like that, our family's staple list of groceries appears on the screen. Fresh eggplant, Sichuan pepper, Greek yogurt, skim milk, and so on. My refrigerator and cabinets have already detected what items we're short on this week, and they automatically ordered the non-perishable staples, rice, soy sauce, cooking oil, for bulk delivery. That means grocery stores like Yonghui can tailor their selection around the items you'd want to pick out for yourself. Fresh produce, unique wines, live seafood. It also allows the supermarkets to dramatically shrink their store's footprint and place smaller stores within walking distance of most homes. Let me know if there's anything you'd like to add or subtract from the list, the cart chimes in. Based on what's in your cart and your fridge at home, it looks like your diet will be short on fiber this week. Shall I add a bag of almonds or ingredients for a split pea soup to correct that? No split pea soup, but have a large bag of almonds delivered to my house, thanks. I'm not sure an algorithm requires thanking, but I do it out of habit. Scanning the list, I make a couple of tweaks. My daughters are out of town, so I can cut a few items, and I've already got some beef in my fridge, so I decide to make my mother's recipe of beef noodles for my wife. Subtract the Greek yogurt and switch to whole milk from now on. Also, add the ingredients for beef noodles that I don't already have at home. No problem, it replies while adjusting my shopping list. The cart is speaking in Mandarin, but in the synthesized voice of my favorite actress, Jennifer Lawrence. It's a nice touch, and one of the reasons running errands doesn't feel like such a chore anymore. The cart moves autonomously through the store, staying a few steps ahead of me while I pick out the ripest eggplants and the most fragrant Sichuan peppercorns, key to creating the numbing spice in the beef noodles. The cart then leads me to the back of the store where a precision-guided robot kneads and pulls fresh noodles for me. As I place them in the cart, Depth-sensing cameras on the cart's rim recognize each item, and sensors lining the bottom weigh them as they go in. The screen crosses things off as I go and displays the total cost. The precise location and presentation of every item has been optimized based on perception and purchase data gathered at the store. What displays do shoppers walk right by? Where do they stop and pick up items to inspect? And which